If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to a special edition of Command Post. I'm joined as ever by our very own Lieutenant General Mark Hartling. General, we got to react to a pretty bizarre interaction President Trump had today with the press. You've seen this, right? You watched what he said?
I have. And we do have to do a special Command Post on this, because if we were truly in a Command Post, this would be causing a whole lot of chaos and dysfunction in terms of how to figure this out, what he's saying. Especially if you're in a Command Post and you hear your commander in chief say what he just said, we might as well just hang it up and pack up the tactical operations center and go home.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point. We have to start with this. Are we at war? This has been a question that we've gone back and forth on a bunch for reasons mostly of the administration trying to avoid congressional oversight. The president just shared this today, September 4th, on his social media platform, that the lunatics, Democrats, whatever, wanted us to lose the war in Iran, not an excursion, not a special military operation, the war. He wants to win the war. And then also today, same day, same person, he was asked, is this a war? Chris, can we play clip 4, please?
The vice president said yesterday that he would not describe the conflict with Iran as a war, but the U.S. resumed strikes for the first time in recent weeks. Can you explain to the American people, if this is not a war, what exactly is it?
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of people don't call it a war. I call it a military conflict because it's small potatoes for us. It's not a big thing. We did Venezuela, and we did this. In Venezuela, we lost nobody, and this, we lost 18 people. In Vietnam, you lost 100,000 people, and in other conflicts, you lost tens of thousands of people. I would say that it's intermittent. You know, we do intermittent strikes. So I heard what he said, and it was interesting because I think that there's a lot of truth that we're not fighting right now. There's no fighting. We're taking out a lot of oil. We control the Hormuz Strait, and we control it very strongly.
Mr. President, 18 people have died in this. It certainly doesn't feel like small potatoes. 18 service members have died. We're seeing record long deployments. You initially said this
record
last
record long? Why is it record long?
Well, so, the 82nd Air Force.
How long were we in Vietnam? How long were we in Vietnam?
We're seeing record.
No, how long were we in Vietnam?
Was out for more than,
we're in 5 months now.
Days at sea.
We've been, and you know what we did in 5 months? They're not going to have a nuclear weapon. That's what we did. Iran will not have a nuclear weapon, because if they did, you probably wouldn't be standing here very long.
Where do you want to start with this one?
I don't know. There are so many things in there we could pick apart. There were not 100,000 people killed in Vietnam. There were about 55,000. The Vietnam War, comparing the length of it to this intermittent conflict, as he calls it, is just silliness. It is not a matter of how long we were in a war. It's the timing of how long individuals are deployed during a certain period of time. There was nobody deployed to Vietnam for 10 years. So there are so many things, Ben, that are infuriating about this. But the one that takes the cake, obviously, is 18 deaths are small potatoes. This is a small potatoes. That's the part that I think the president, as much as he's trying to put something in context, using other wars, other fights, other deployments, the more he is really radically screwing it up, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, even the earlier clips about what the lanes are open in the Strait of Hormuz, the ships are coming out, we're getting oil out. The one big one was, we control Iran. We control Iran. I didn't know,
yeah,
I didn't know we could control another country. But again, we could sit here and turn this into a War College seminar and break down the words that he used just now to a bunch of people standing around his desk with a lot of people standing behind him at the desk and him pontificating about a subject he knows very little about as the president of the United States and the commander in chief.
Yeah, it seems to me with all of his statements, what he's really struggling with is how to think about and how to talk about the cost-benefit analysis. And it is a very difficult thing to do. It is a thing presidents have to do. It's a thing senior commanders like you have to do, where you have to say, you know, are there national security objectives that are worth asking people to give up their lives? And sometimes the answer is yes. And we're very lucky that we have people who are willing to give up their lives for a greater cause. Trump here is struggling because he can't really articulate factually what the greater objective here was, because he's changed it so much. It wasn't regime change. It certainly wasn't helping the Iranian people. That didn't work out. He's falling back on this, well, they won't have a nuclear weapon, which wasn't exactly what his rationale was when he began Operation Epic Fury in the first place. He said that was already accomplished. And also, it's not clear that has anything to do with what's happening now in the Strait of Hormuz. He can't come out and say, well, all these people died and we're actually slightly worse off than we were in February before this war started. So instead he's saying, well, it's not as bad as Vietnam. It's not as bad as Vietnam. So there. I don't know how that argument's supposed to be persuasive.
The other part of the argument that I found a whole lot offensive, I won't say a little offensive, was when he did mention, you know, the denuclearization of Iran. And he said, if I hadn't done what I had done, you'd be dead right now, saying that to a reporter, in effect, saying, well, they would have put a nuclear weapon on your head and Israel wouldn't exist anymore and they'd be shooting at Europe. How do you go from trying to contain a nuclear production facility to immediately assuming this nation is going to start throwing nukes all over the world, and especially at a reporter in Washington, D.C., standing in the Oval Office? It just is so, Ben, there are so many words to describe it, but the one I keep going back to is silly. Mm-hmm. It's silliness. We are run right now by a couple of guys who are doing things only for their political survival. Nothing else. Nothing that's helping the United States of America. It is their sole political advisor, and they're trying to make us as Americans feel dumb about what they're doing. And it's increasingly obvious to anybody that understands national security or how things work that they are not doing anything for us. They're doing it to survive or to attempt to survive.
You mentioned this earlier. Trump also said in the course of his rather disorganized statement, we have essentially taken over Iran. Chris, can we play clip one?
Venezuela, and we have essentially taken over Iran. Now, there's been no shooting for days. Before the hit that we gave them the other night to wipe out their radar, they had very sophisticated, they brought in radar because we knocked it out once. Now we knocked it out twice. Now we don't notice any activity. I think they're tired of putting it in and getting blown. But the Strait of Hormuz is taking a lot of ships. We're getting a lot of ships out of there. A lot of oil is coming out of the Strait. There are no mines whatsoever. We have no mines. You know why? We took out all the mines. They had some mines. We took them all with our minesweepers. They go underwater. Nobody can see them. The best in the world. So we're doing a great job. And I would say it's a military conflict, if you want. Some people could call it a war. I don't think it matters what you call it. What matters is the fact that we have had tremendous success. We stopped Iran from having a nuclear weapon.
General, I want to paint you a hypothetical here. You're a commander, and one of your subordinate officers comes to you on Monday and says, good news, General, we destroyed the target. And you say, great. Then he comes to you Tuesday and says, good news, General, we destroyed the target again, the same one. Is that good news?
That's not good news. And I'd also be looking at other people in the tactical operations center, the command post, and saying, do we have minesweepers here? Because there are no minesweepers in the United States Navy right now. Yes, they disabled some of the mines, but his implication is there's these boats that are going underwater and taking care of the mines that are, and that's not true even in and of itself. But, you know, Ben, I've been trying to figure out what must be going on in either the Oval Office or the Situation Room. And I think I've come to the conclusion that he has a lot of people who are very knowledgeable come in and tell them what they're striking, what their kinetic strike package is, what intelligence they're gaining. And he's picking up snippets of things and feeding them back to the press like today. And it's just confusing as hell. So they told him, you know, he probably said, well, what did you hit last night? And they said, well, we hit, you know, a mine lane missile. We hit a radar. Oh, you hit a radar? Oh, that's good. I know a little bit about radars. I kind of know what radars are because my uncle was an MIT professor. And that becomes the topic of discussion to the press. I think that's what's going on. Now, I'm presuming that. But I've talked to bosses in the past where I've tried to give them a load of information and they latch upon a snippet and that becomes the key story. And it's not accurate and it's not helping the American people. And it's not the fact that we're not in a war. We are in it. And he also said, you know, we haven't struck in a couple of days. They struck on Wednesday. That was 2 days ago. Okay.
Yeah, so weird flex, but okay.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah. What do you think of the statement, we have taken over Iran?
Yeah, it's the 51st state, I guess, because it only has 92 million people and it's three times the size of Iraq. And it is, I'm not sure what taken over means in the first place. If he's saying we've secured the Strait of Hormuz, that would be a stretch. But taking over Iran is an impossible task. And if so, we're in big trouble if we've done that.
Yeah, I cannot. Maybe he means, since he sort of tends to think in financial, monetary, sort of narrowly economic terms, that like we have a blockade on their southern coast, so we've taken them over economically. But even that is not really true. I have no idea what he's talking about.
Well, this is the commander-in-chief, remember, Ben. This is a guy who is supposed to have control and understanding of the intelligence community, the State Department, the Department of Defense, the Commerce Department, everybody else. And he's comparing basically a snatch and grab operation in Venezuela, which was highly successful by special operations forces, a relatively small group with a lot of aircraft, but a whole lot of intelligence and a synchronized coordinated action with attempting to return to normal in a major oil platform and against a major country that is having none of his nonsense. It's just, it is uncompared. It's not comparable. So I'm not sure why he keeps going back to Venezuela.
Yeah. Well, he did it again. Sorry, Chris. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here because this is actually the clip that I think is the most troubling, and it sort of wraps up everything that we've been talking about so far and adds a new, very unsettling spice to it. So Chris, if we could play clip three, and then General, I want to hear your response.
We've been in there for 5 months, and in 5 months, what did we do? We stopped them from having a nuclear weapon. If we didn't go in there, you wouldn't have Israel right now. You wouldn't have the Middle East. And they probably would go at European cities and our cities next. But we stopped them from having a nuclear weapon in 5 months. And you know what? We lost 18 souls, 18 great souls. I was there to greet the families of those people at Dover. And they're great. I got very friendly with some of the families. They were incredible families. But, and one is too much. But in Vietnam, we lost tens of thousands of people. In Afghanistan, we lost a lot. Sleepy Joe Biden lost 13 just by standing at an airport that they shouldn't have been in, because they should have used Bagram, not the local little airport right in the middle of a city. They lost 13, but they lost 78 people in terms of their arms, their legs, their face was just wiped out. You don't mention that.
Hell?
You don't mention that. What we've done is amazing.
Let's put the Bagram airfield to rest first, Ben, if we could.
Okay, let's start with that.
So the two airfields in Afghanistan that the U.S. forces were using, Bagram was one of them. When you get a message from the Secretary of State, Pompeo, that a deal has been reached with the Taliban.
And under the Trump administration. Right.
Under the Trump administration. And we will withdraw by May. What you do as a military commander is you start looking for facilities where you can withdraw from, closing them down as fast as you can and narrowing it into one place. That is what we did. And under the Biden administration, they didn't do the closure in May because the military came back to the president and said, we can't get out of here that fast. We need more time. So they extended it till the August timeframe. And it was it a mess? Was the non-combatant evacuation operation conducted in Afghanistan a mess? Yes, it was. Were 13 people killed at Abbey Gate because of an explosive device? Yes, they were. Suicide vests are relatively common in many Middle Eastern and Far Eastern countries. So that's a further explanation, but he keeps coming back to that, that there were 13 people killed at Abbey Gate. And that's true. But you have had 18 people killed and 700 plus wounded in a war of choice. You can't blame that on Biden's actions in Afghanistan. You just can't do it. So this is, you know, the whole face of this, Ben, and what we've been talking about because of the confusing language, the unsupportable comments, the lack of understanding of what is happening boils down, I think, to one issue. And it's why we're, I think, on the air tonight talking about this in a special episode of Command Post. We have lost trust in our leaders. And when you lose trust and they continue to feed the fire and feed the flames of that loss of trust, you're going to do nothing but cause people to be pissed off. And truthfully, I try and be an analysis. I try and give analysis. I try and be an analyst and stay true to my military roots and say, here's what's right and here's what's wrong. But this is really starting to piss me off. And I think it's pissing off a lot of other people too.
I understandable that it would be. I mean, it's pissing me off. I mean, we have to talk about the way the president of the United States sitting in the Oval Office just gave this weirdly gruesome, but also sort of not clinical, just like very sort of weirdly like grossed out but unfeeling sort of inhuman kind of description of, I don't know if these were soldiers who were killed or wounded or what he's talking about. We know Trump has a whole long history with wounded soldiers and he hates seeing people who have suffered combat wounds, but like that is not, to my ear, a respectful or productive way to talk about people who were wounded in the service of the country. I mean, it's just gruesome and awful. Like he's describing a video game or a movie.
It's war porn is what I call it. It's war porn. It's the same reason we're seeing repeated images of CENTCOM striking targets. And it doesn't matter a bit. It matters that the CENTCOM commander is hitting the targets he's being asked to hit. But the American people who they think they're impressing, this dates back to Desert Storm and early days of these shock and awe campaigns, where if you show enough explosions of things getting blown up, people think you're successful. And that's not the case. You're not always successful because you blow things up and you can't kill your way out of this. And whenever the president keeps saying, I'm going to obliterate Iran and we're going to strike them again and kill more people, it's his attempt at saying we're going to be able to kill our way out of this. And that's not how you end a war.
Yeah. Also, He's made very clear he's not going to do it. He's threatened it like 18 times by now and never followed through. So, I mean, maybe that's the art of the deal. I don't know. But not even the Iranians seem to take it seriously at this point. Moving on from Iran, we also have to talk about another maddening thing Trump said at this press conference. Because why not throw in a little Putin while we're there? Chris, can we play the last clip, please? Clip number two.
Watch that Putin would never attack NATO territory. Now Germany is blaming Russia for an explosive drone found at a German airport. Isn't that an attack on NATO territory?
I don't
think
that Putin will be... I speak to him. I know him very well. Putin's not looking to attack NATO territory.
Ooh, I have a follow-up question. Can I play reporter now?
Yeah, go for it.
Follow-up question. All right, Mr. President, why did you send CIA Director Radcliffe to Moscow on a secret mission if Putin's A-OK and everything's fine? And, oh, by the way, why also did the intelligence community just release notification that Putin actually is trying to attack and bring asymmetric warfare against several NATO member countries?
It's a great question. This reminds me of the moment in Trump's first term when he had a summit with Putin in Helsinki, Finland. And someone asked him, well, what about the very well-researched, well-documented, pretty obvious case of Russian interference in the 2016 election? And he said, oh, well, I trust Putin. I don't see, he said he didn't do it. So I guess he didn't do it. And he sided with Putin over the American intelligence community.
One more point to that.
Yeah.
As the president is trying to coordinate an exit strategy from Iran, where was the prime minister of Iran this weekend or this last week?
He was
in Kyrgyzstan along with Putin and Xi and the Belarusian president and a few other people in the Shanghai Cooperation Council. So while we're doing the G20 and inviting, and Secretary Bessent is inviting the Russian finance minister to Asheville, North Carolina, Xi and Putin and the prime minister of Iran are all coming together inside of Kyrgyzstan. And in fact, Putin said at that conference to the prime minister of Iran, we will continue to support you in your actions against the United States. I'm glad that's the guy he trusts.
The idea, even if you assume that Putin and Trump talk all the time, which frankly they might. I mean, we've seen reports to that effect. Could be. Even if you assume that they actually have an open and honest relationship, don't laugh. Even if you assume that the things they say to each other, the other one takes seriously, the idea that a Russian drone attack on a German airport would be met with a, hey, cut that out. You know, that's not right. I mean, this is it. Look, I know Trump gets very upset when you say that he's got some weird thing with Vladimir Putin and the Russians, but he could do something at some point to disabuse us of this notion. And at every opportunity, he behaves like, look, let me put it this way. If he were on the Russian payroll, he would not do a lot of things different, at least in his own personal behavior and rhetoric. I mean, it's preposterous, right? This was an attack on Germany by Russia. It's a serious thing. Historically, when Germany and Russia start fighting, bad things happen. Am I wrong?
It's happened a couple times in the past, I think. Yeah. And then they usually switch sides and they become friends with each other and attack other people too. So yeah. Yeah. Not good. It has been, I don't want to say a unique week. It's been a normal week as we head into the Labor Day holidays. And that's really unfortunate because while all this is going on, you have the Supreme Court allowing things to happen. You have Trump focused on an arch right outside our Arlington Cemetery. You have Witkoff and Kushner going to Moscow and Kyiv this weekend. Don't know what's going to come of that.
Nothing.
But they're going to Moscow first. That's an important factor. There are a whole lot more stories, Ben. You and I get to focus on the military and links to national security connections. And I don't think either one of us has Trump derangement syndrome. This is more of a syndrome of we're seeing what's going on, and it's not good for the American people and for our nation as a whole. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Just before we get out of here, I did want to ask you, since you were the commander of U.S. Army Europe and spent a lot of time with their European allies, if you saw two personal representatives of the president going, as you said, first to Moscow, then to Kiev, the message there being, first, we're going to go meet with the Russians. Then we'll tell the Ukrainians what the Russians have to say, right? We're going to go meet with our friends first, then the people we're negotiating against, as opposed to the opposite. And you saw what President Trump said about like, don't worry about Putin. I'll talk to him. I'll tell him to cut it out. What, based on your experience with our European allies and our non-European allies as well, what do you think they're hearing? What do you think they're thinking?
Well, I will tell you what I used to get, Ben, and I think it'll shed some light on this. Every time I would travel to one of the 49 countries in Europe, I would get what was called a roll-up. And it would be a black book that I could read in the airplane over a couple of hours. And it would be, here are the things that you have to be aware of in X country. But then here's the roll-up of what we've seen over the last 24 to 72 hours of what has specifically happened. So this is fresh in your mind. So they give you the breakdown between long-term stuff and what's happening right now, so you know what's important to the people you're meeting with. When I'd go to those other countries, the purpose normally was going to meet my counterpart, my military counterpart, and having theater security cooperation discussions. But the first place I'd go when I got off the airplane was the U.S. Embassy. And the second place I'd go after the U.S. Embassy and getting basically a country team brief from the ambassador and his staff, which usually included intelligence people from the Central Intelligence Agency and the DIA. Then I would go to the highest ranking government official of that particular country and pay my respects and tell them that I'm aware of the things that they were doing and that I would either be supportive or this goes contrary to the U.S. government. Then I would meet with my counterpart military commander and we would discuss our, you know, the issues that were important to both of us. But you can see the kinds of things that we talked about today are the kinds of things other countries are talking about. They all watch the United States. We may not watch Moldova, or we may not watch Croatia's intelligence systems or the government Serbia.
Slovenia. Yeah, Serbia.
Slovenia. Sure. I mean, name it. But they all watch us, and they're very astute at discussing who we are and what we do. So if you don't think both Zelensky and Putin know what's coming to them and how they can outplay them, it's like preparing to go into a card game and who you know you're playing with. And as much as I don't know Jared Kushner or Steve Witkoff, I think that they do not have the kinds of savvy outside the business world that you need when you're dealing high stakes negotiation with foreign government. But that's just me.
Well, they haven't shown us the goods yet, but if they do, we'll do another episode of Command Post and I will eat my hat. General, thank you so much for joining me for this special episode of Command Post. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Ben, and happy Labor Day to all of those who labor out there.
Yeah, have a good long weekend.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.